that idea of I've got a problem, headless is going to be a silver bullet, is probably one of the biggest disasters waiting to happen.
You're listening to Commerce Talk with Smart OSC. Hello, welcome to Commerce Talk with Smart OSC. I'm your host, Adrian Wakeham, the Regional Manager for Australia and New Zealand at Smart OSC. We're going to get absolutely off our heads in today's episode because we're discussing headless commerce, or more accurately, how not to do headless commerce. Now, to dive into what headless can and can't do for a business, we're going to speak to two experts who are going to be coming at this topic from slightly different angles. So we have firstly, Paul Williams, the Director of Solutions Engineering for APAC at the leading commerce platform Commerce Tools, and with over 20 years experience across a variety of industries, including retail, finance, media and government, Australian technology and retail leader, and the CIO at Q Clothing, Shane Lenton. Thank you very much for joining us both, gents. Please tell us a little bit about yourselves and the work you've been doing. We might start with you, Shane.
Thanks, Adrian. So for myself, as far as background, I'm the founder of Unified Commerce, which is a retail and technology consulting business. I'm also the co-founder of The Wishlist Company. And above and beyond that, I sit on quite a few advisory board roles for some retail platforms, both technology and also some businesses in the circular economy. So yeah, pretty broad remit. I spend my days, some of which, as you mentioned, as CIO and CDO for Q Clothing in a consulting capacity. And outside of that, just spend a lot of time working with retailers of all different sizes at all different stages on their journey.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Shane. And Paul, you're more than 15 seconds of fame. Go for it, mate.
Thanks, Adrian. Yeah. So part of Commerce Tools, having been in, I guess, the commerce and customer engagement industry for about 20 years now, prior to joining Commerce Tools, I was leading the SAP CX practice for DXC globally. I've been involved in many, many implementations in Australia and both abroad, everything from retailers that range from automotive through to traditional retailers, airlines and so forth, as well as a number of government type initiatives throughout the globe as well. So look, really excited to be talking about this kind of technology and how it's now shaping the way I guess organizations are starting to do business and enabling that flexibility. So yeah, looking forward to the chat.
Awesome. No, thank you very much for that, guys. Well, look, you know, I guess without any further ado, let's jump straight into all things headless commerce. And I guess even though this episode, we aimed at a slightly more technical audience, first things first, we should probably start with a quick explainer as personal definitions from both of you of just what headless commerce is. So, yeah, so I guess how would each of you explain headless commerce as if you were talking to a child or a golden retriever?
Maybe I'll go first because I think on this topic, Paul probably forgets more on a daily basis than I know. So I'll have nothing left to say after he really explains it. Look, in its simplest term for me, it's decoupling the front end of a website from the back end of the website. So traditionally, we have an e-commerce platform where it's all encompassing. It's one platform and one stack. And if we think about, you know, whether it's your Magentos, your Shopify's, your Commerce Clouds, you know, even Hybris for that matter, or SAP Commerce now these days, but BigCommerce, I mean, traditionally they're e-commerce platforms or commerce platforms. And realistically for me, I suppose headless is that journey to decouple. I won't go into too many of the benefits or anything like that yet or disadvantages. We'll cover that in further questions. But yeah, at a basic level, that's my, I suppose, take on things.
Yeah, and I think, you know, to add, explaining it to a child or a Labrador, I think I'd be amazed that a Labrador understood what I was saying, be more interested in that. But I think these days, it's interesting that you use the point around a child because fundamentally, you know, children or millennials or, you know, the connected sort of age is really what's sort of spurring a lot of the headless commerce approach these days, is that we're so connected in so many different ways with different devices, different endpoints, different, you know, things of actually interacting both with each other or equally with retailers, is what's really spurred on the change to a headless approach. And Shane rightfully pointed out that it is about decoupling, you know, from the traditional monolithic solutions, but it's really about enabling organizations to be able to tap into the plethora of different technologies, devices, services that this day and age and people in this day and age are using in order to transact and work with each other, whether it be B2B, shifting everything online from the traditional sales, you know, person in field, or equally to, you know, the children at home using gaming devices to buy upgrades to their Minecraft, you know, character or whatever. All of these is what is fundamentally shifting away from a single point of, you know, technology to deliver commerce to thousands and thousands of digital touch points, all interacting with a single retailer or provider of devices and services. And so, you know, headless is really about just one part of enabling that in a very large ecosystem these days.
Okay, no, thank you. And I guess sort of move straight on, straight from into that, both of you have obviously been around headless for a while now. So, you know, I'll call this next little bit, you know, let's rip the Band-Aid off and get into potentially some headless horror stories. Without naming names, and unless you want to, you know, we all signed waivers before we did this, didn't we? Maybe this is where we can get into some of the mistakes that business make that you've seen when it comes, you know, when it comes to headless commerce. You know, like for example, you know, can you talk to what can happen if you're diving into headless potentially without having the right infrastructure in place, be that the technology infrastructure, the human resourcing infrastructure, et cetera, you know, in place to use it properly?
Look, I think, and this is changing by the second, you know, the headless conversations and the technology and the solutions around headless, both the front and the back end is, you know, emerging like almost like no other in this space. So I think, you know, if you looked at headless or what was before headless, what was something similar, you would have looked at, well, you'd be talking about bespoke e-com platforms. And I'll probably put my hand up here and say I'm one of the last one standing with, you know, with the Q business where we're on a ASP.NET e-com environment. But what that has done for us is provide the opportunity for us to do whatever the hell we want to do when we want to do it. It means when it's made sense, we've been able to be first in market. It means that we've had the complete flexibility. But I mean, I'll stop on the pros for a second. We'll talk about some of the cons. And I think realistically, the downside of that is you're not getting the shared benefit. If you look at a platform like Shopify and what can be spun up more or less out of the box, plug a theme in, upload some products, you know, install some very cost-effective apps, and you can really deliver a great customer experience for, you know, the vast majority of businesses on a platform like that. Obviously, to be provided, you know, more of a branded and a more CX focused, you know, having the right dev agency and, you know, UX design and everything else comes into it. But I think for me, some of the biggest risks, it's a little bit like the rabbit hole in the past that businesses have gone down, where they've gone 100% down the bespoke path and potentially underestimating, you know, the development effort. Whilst on one hand, there's huge agility and speed benefits. On the other hand, you know, if you don't have the right talent, you don't have the right people involved, I think it, you know, you're somewhat opening Pandora's box. So for me, headless, there's got to be the right reasons. And I think this just having a little bit or a part of a reason. And, you know, there was a comment about 12 months ago, I was speaking to someone in the industry and they've got a great e-com business, really, really good e-com business. And their reason for main driver was speed. and that alone. And my question to them was, you know, have you basically had a look at your current situation, really done a deep dive to understand what the bottlenecks, what the challenges are? I think, you know, we could get confused at the moment, and some people thinking it's that there's a need, they have to be on there. I think it's a phenomenal, you know, approach to modern and sophisticated commerce, but you've got to really, the business case has got to stack up. You've got to have a clear vision and understanding of why and what the benefits are. And then you've got to really be willing to put the effort, the budget, and the resources to it to execute both now and also, you know, the ability to stay agile. It's not a set and forget that you can do with a lot of other platforms out there. And I'm not always saying that's the right approach, but for businesses with resourcing, budget constraints and otherwise, and even, you know, just their turnover often doesn't justify heading down this path. But for me, I think biggest mistake is maybe just not going into it for the right reasons, or not really evaluating your current state of play and making an educated decision or informed decision, rather than just sort of, you know, it's the new thing, I need to be on it. I think they're to me, you know, really important things.
Okay, no, thanks. Paul, anything that you disagree with or wanted to add to that, or, you know, where are you coming in from?
No, yeah, I absolutely agree with Shane in that regard, in that it is the sort of, I guess, popular word, buzzword, as you might want to call it at this day and age, and for all the right reasons, absolutely. You know, the benefits that many customers and organizations are getting from it. But to Shane's point, don't do it because you've got FOMO. Don't do it because you've heard it and, you know, others are doing it, or big brands are doing it, you know, of the likes of Legos and AT&T's and other, you know, big brands that have the budget to sort of sit behind it, and you're seeing, hey, they're getting success, that means we will too. It doesn't work that way. Do it because you've completely outgrown, you know, your existing platform. It's fundamentally stopping you from being able to evolve to new different areas, or, you know, it's run its course from a platform perspective, or you're looking to move into new segments. Whatever the business value reasons for making change is what should be doing, driving you to consider going a headless approach, not because someone else did it. You know, it should really, to Shane's point, have a business case that stacks up behind it. And, you know, organizations like Commerce Tools and many others, and lots of SIs in the market, are making this shift now and have lots and lots of different case studies and reasons and things that can support those types of business cases. So make sure you're asking the right questions and tapping into other customers who have done it, and equally find, or, you know, organizations that have done it that, and work through that to make sure it stacks up for you.
Yeah, to your point there about not doing it because you've got FOMO, and even Shane, you know, is headless what used to be bespoke, just with a new term? I mean, do you think that headless as a phrase, having been on trend for the last couple of years, or having been so trendy over the last couple of years, has that had any detriment to the perception of doing headless simply for that fact?
I think inevitably, yeah. I think there's certainly skeptics in the market. I know in this region, particularly Australia, everyone's quite skeptical of buzzwords. In other parts of the world, they sort of kind of jump on board and go with it. And, you know, for all the right reasons again. But I think, you know, the actual term was coined by our CEO, Dirk Horrig, back when he kind of invented the Commerce Tools platform. And he wasn't really a big fan of the term when it came out. I think, you know, headless is something that everyone's now put into the bucket of, you know, separating, and what we sort of said at the start of the conversation of, you know, creating that flexibility and so forth. But what it's really about, I think, is taking things in a more composable approach. And I think the term headless has become synonymous with that, because it's a nice, easy term to use and everyone's now familiar with it. But the headless part of, you know, modern commerce architecture is just one part of it. you know, the big part is really around being able to pick and choose the best of breed technologies and compose those together in a way that suits your organization and so forth. And headless is, again, just one part of that whole approach. But we're sort of lumping it in as a bucket to that. And so I think, yeah, the message of it gets a little bit lost in translation through that, I guess, you know, normalization of the vernacular there.
Yeah, I'd add to that as well. I mean, obviously, Commerce Tools comes at it from, you know, I think a very healthy space in the, you know, particularly with the microservices architecture underpinning the back end and really opening up that opportunity. I think at the moment there's a lot of the key, you know, traditional e-com platforms that are now, you know, talking about their iterations of headless, but essentially you've still got some of the legacy controls or limitations around the back end. Without a flexible back end, you can have all the flexibility you want on the front end, but ultimately you still need to process transactions a certain way and a certain type of transactions. You still need to, you know, particularly if we talk about omnichannel and some of the opportunities that it created around this, it's fantastic to be able to make the front end look sexy. Any designer can do that. You can present all the right options at the right time, but if you don't have the underlying architecture to support that at the back end, and it very much comes down to, you know, I've been out there preaching unified commerce for some time now, and it's quite a similar approach, I suppose, just without the view of the monolithic platform sitting at the core. But it's that idea, you're decoupling the front end and the back end, and you've got touch points. You know, people are moving away from talking about channels now, and it's really touch points, whether that be social, you know, whether it be watch, whether it be your fridge, obviously your phone, and really any internet connected device. You know, it really opens up opportunity. But I think at the moment we're in an interesting position where you've sort of got your two ends. You've got something like Commerce Tools, which really can take you from, you know, mid to large to enterprise, and with the utmost flexibility and a real pedigree in the architecture. But I think we're also in an interesting time where people are just wanting a bit more flexibility on the front end, which is great from a brand experience point of view, and I really get it and I understand it. But ultimately, to be able to really innovate and drive best-in-class customer experience, particularly in the omnichannel space, still having that same constraints on the back end that some of these platforms have certainly provides some challenges to ultimately be able to, you know, fulfill the, I won't say fantasy, but the vision.
Yeah, and you know, and I think I suppose even when you're sort of looking at, and you've already mentioned, you know, microservices architecture, of which headless is one portion, as Paul's already commented on. This is one small part of microservices is this headless part. Would you say, I mean, are there any particularly bad or, you know, really, or, you know, what's the most egregious examples that you might have seen of some of the bullshit that's been spouted about what headless commerce is, or more importantly, what it can do, you know, for those who are potentially just going after the starry stuff, or yeah, again, they've read it in Forbes, they say, oh god, yeah, we have to do this too.
Yeah, I won't talk about particular examples, but I will talk about just that, a little bit of that misconception of how much agility and flexibility that it can drive. Just to reiterate what I said before, without having the back end as a modern architecture to sort of support and have the same level of flexibility, but deliver performance and scale. And it's flexibility, performance, and scale. They're three, you know, three really important factors if you are going to head down a path like this. And I think it's just a real clear understanding of I've seen some great examples, there's a lot in market that are coming soon on some of the, you know, the Shopify's and the big commerce of the world. But again, as I say, like you get a lot of flexibility up there, but from an omnichannel perspective, you've still got some of those limitations at the back end. So it's just important for people to understand, and depending on what they're trying to achieve. And, you know, if it is, you know, progressive web apps and more of that app-like experience, and as Paul said before, you know, the next generation of consumer are living and breathing on these social platforms, and that's the sort of experience that they expect as they're engaging, interacting with, you know, on websites and things like that these days. And that's where there's a really big gap at the moment, and I think we'll see a lot of change and innovation around that space just to sort of catch up across the board, and everyone will be scrambling and are scrambling to work out what that means and how they do it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, to the point of what are some egregious examples of that? It's where organizations have kind of just jumped on that term of headless and saying, yeah, we're headless, but to Shane's point, haven't necessarily made any change to the back end. So now they've opened up all of this kind of flexibility from a, you know, end consumer experience perspective, but haven't enabled organizations to then, you know, onboard that flexibility. They've, you know, potentially tripled, you know, quadrupled the number of digital touch points that now engaging with, but haven't necessarily put the effort into the back end of the platform to be able to accept that extra content or those extra orders or that extra, you know, incoming information, or equally enable their customer service team to be able to support, you know, customers who are engaging them through social commerce or through those types of other, you know, channels and digital touch points. And so, you know, they might kind of come to market and say, hey, you can put whatever storefront you want on this, but not really answer the question that now that, or the problem that that now opens up for them is that, how do I now service these people that are coming to us from those different touch points and be able to support inventory supply or pricing at each of those, you know, locations and so forth. And so, yeah, while they might answer that headless question and be able to compete from a marketing perspective, they very quickly fall down. And so I think there is, to Shane's point, you know, that transition of organizations, customers kind of getting their head around it, but realizing it is opening up a whole raft of other, you know, challenges, both technical and business-wise, that they have to start thinking about. And that's not just because of the technical change that we're making. It's just because our e-commerce or commerce, as we should really be calling it, market is changing so rapidly, you know, and you could channel it all through one or two different points before, but now it's just so vastly scaled out that this is sort of opening that book for people to kind of go, oh my God, we got to start thinking about this now.
And I guess to that point, where you're talking about business challenges, I mean, are there any particular business challenges, typical business problems that, for example, headless would not be able to fix?
Look, I just think going back to consulting that I do, if your inventory is shit, if, you know, if you already don't have a single view of customer across your online and offline, to get maximum opportunity here, and Paul talks rightfully so of commerce platform and all these touch points. Ultimately, if you don't have your house in order at what's considered baseline best of breed retail, whether that be even, you know, whether it be a pure play or a multi-channel retailer, you can't just think you can plug this in over the top and it'll solve things. It'll create more challenges. It'll create more, a hell of a lot more opportunities, but it's going to create more challenges unless you have that, you know, your house in order. And, you know, it's things like, but then when you do have that and you introduce something like, you know, a way of thinking and approach like headless, it does open up so much opportunity where you're not waiting for platforms to play catch up or to have commercial agreements in place and all these sorts of things for businesses to be able to evolve and capitalize on opportunities. But, you know, at its simplest form, it's not a silver bullet. It's going to create more challenges than opportunities. I think the opportunities will be greater than the challenges if it's, you know, thought through properly and executed well. But to think if you don't have your house in order currently, and particularly in a multi-channel environment, to just plug this in as a traditional e-commerce sort of replacement and think that it's great, I'm going to be able to do the click and collects and I'm going to be able to do split orders and I'm going to be able to do, you know, endless aisle and single view of customer and all the rest. There's so much more to it. And it's Yeah, I just think it needs to be part of the strategy and it needs to be architected well across your total environment. It's not just the whole approach can't just be bolted on. It needs to be very thought through.
Yeah, I 100% agree, you know, and to the point that commerce is now just your business. Like it's not e-commerce. It's not just another piece of software you go and stand up to open up your online channel and have it feed into the rest of it. We're talking about how your entire business runs fundamentally, you know, everyone working from home more so and being online in those digital channels is what you're effectively looking to replace. And so again, it shouldn't be about someone looking to replace because it should be, we need to grow. We've outgrown what we're on. You know, we've got to now roll out these different things. And you got to think through all of that very, very thoughtfully to make sure that you don't, you know, create more problems than opportunities, as Shane points out. This is really about organizations making that leap. And equally also being an organization that isn't KPI'd on just getting a little bit more than that they did last year. This is about organizations that are happy to, that want to grow, want to go beyond, and are not KPI'd on just, you know, 10% more on last year. They're KPI'd on being innovative, you know, opening up new digital channels, rolling out into new regions, and also, I guess, able to fail. And, you know, platforms like Commerce Tools or the headless approach enables businesses to fail fast and fix and repeat and roll out new changes. But equally, the business has to be accepting of that and not, you know, be afraid or slap people on the wrist because it didn't quite work. That this is the space we're going into, is that we're all trying to learn new ways of dealing through social commerce and how's that all going to play out. If you KPI people on, hey, we didn't get the 20%, you know, through social commerce that we thought, you're all fired. It's just not going to work. You're not the organization that's ready for that.
So, I mean, would it be safe to say if this is your first, if this is the first time you were entering into having a digital asset, you're unlikely to step straight into headless because there's probably a couple of things you need to learn first on how to get that bit right. Would that be correct?
100%. Just like that inventory piece that Shane was referring to, or making sure your multi-channel is able to feed, or your in-store inventory positions are able to be fed back. You know, there's lots of things that go on in that space that you need to sort out first before you can really jump headlong into this.
And just a point on that, I mean, even with a mature business like Q, yeah, we made a change for one of our touch points last week to just open up inventory, you know, through one of our concession partners. And, you know, we've seen an uplift overnight of 12 times revenue on last year. Overnight, literally the first week we made that change. But the change was, you know, a lot of thought needed to go into driving that change. There's, you know, the order fulfillment, the order routing, you know, stock accuracy, and, you know, it's all things that go into these. And look, we had the agility to do some of these things because of, you know, the bespoke nature. But yeah, without all the other stuff that we've been doing in the background and executing well from a, you know, unified commerce point of view, it would have been a nightmare or a, you know, a disaster from a customer experience perspective. And I think probably one of the other big ones, just to add to that, and to your point, Adrian, where you sort of said, you know, if you're someone new into this space or even an area of the business that hasn't been that, or a business that hasn't been that focused on the online aspect, and all the touch points that come with that across social and all the rest, outgrow the platform that you're on before you take on, you know, a highly sophisticated, complex, you know, opportunity, but challenge there. And obviously there are stepping stones, and I've touched on it before, you know, the likes of BigCommerce and Shopify, and there are iterations of that. I know some customers that are out there that, or some retailers that are out there that, you know, are from a customer experience and particularly a brand flexibility on the front end. They've wanted more control over that brand experience and things like that. So it's made sense for them. But yeah, it's to go
you know, full stack and really execute it in its purity. It's a significant investment for the right business with the right opportunity and the right runway. It'll be business changing. You know, there's some great examples out there, and I'm sure Paul can rattle off plenty out there that did a really world-class brands, and they've now got world-class commerce solutions to back it up and support it. And I think they're amazing success stories. But just go back to the whys and really having a clear understanding, informed, and whether that's, you know, the individuals doing their research or having a good partner, you know, that's agnostic and can really take them through that and guide them through that process. I think it's a really important one.
And I guess other than that situation you've just talked us through, I mean, are there other types of businesses, other situations where taking a more traditional monolithic structure actually makes more sense? Even though, I mean, we understand that, you know, unified commerce, composable commerce, whatever the phrase is going to be in another 2 years' time, is the future that we're sort of heading towards. But is there still room for the, you know, for the monolith?
Sure. I mean, in my view, I think that, you know, for a business to be able to have access, you know, not have a big dev team, be pretty light on, whether it be agency or otherwise, design a site, you know, or pick up a theme and have that theme modified to suit their requirements. I mean, for me, we're talking the vast majority of retailers in Australia. I think that's a very sensible and approach that executed well, you know, with limited resources, they can have very, very, very successful businesses. But I think it's when it's when those businesses or brands, whether it's the business its size or opportunity, whether they need flexibility to capitalize on opportunity that doesn't exist in some of the traditional approaches, or it's a size and scale piece, I think that's where it really starts becoming interesting. And like I say, it's a huge opportunity, but I still think, you know, for me, in my view, it's sort of that 80-20 rule. And the 20 will be, you know, I'm just talking purely on number of businesses, but that 20 will will out punch probably the 80% in revenue and turnover. Those that are right for it and that do pick up and capitalize on the opportunity that's there.
Any comment from you, Paul? Any addition to that?
Yeah, I agree. I think there's absolutely a space still. You know, there's still so many SMB organizations that are still working their way through this, especially in B2B space, you know, that are just really tapping into the digital commerce side of things, that this really plays out and enables them to, you know, go through those learnings and get that back office in order, because they don't have to think about the various different layers or the technology involved. You know, the headless or composable approach is really for mature organizations, the digitally mature, the ones who have outgrown those traditional platforms, the out of the boxes or the all-in-one solutions. And it's part of their vision and their strategy to grow and go beyond that, right? It's just, you know, enable different layers. They've gone through all those learnings together. And equally, there's so many businesses that don't need that scale, you know, they're enough. There's where I live, you know, in central Victoria, there's a very, very successful hot rodding business that uses a Magento platform and, you know, they're doing really well online. They've grown massively. And there's so many of those businesses here in Australia of those likes. And their focus is in on what they do, not how they do it. You know, they manufacture hot rod parts and they sell them online and they do a really great job of it. They don't need anything more than that. And they shouldn't have to Shane's point. They're not a technical organization or a digital organization. And there's thousands of those of which these types of platforms are absolutely suited to. But yeah, when you get enterprise, when you grow beyond that and you're the sizes of the likes of Kmart's or, you know, Big W's or JB Hi-Fi's of the world, although they're a unique proposition in their own, that's where, you know, they're starting to think beyond that. And the business is driving that scale. They've got investment and it's a need rather than a want.
This is generally the stage in the podcast where I would generally turn to our experts to pull together some takeaways and some top tips. So yeah, I'll throw it back to you. You know, what would you say are your absolute top tips for knowing when headless is going to be the right fit for your business, and really and to make sure that you're avoiding some of the pitfalls that we've talked about over the last half an hour or so.
I'm happy to go first. So mine would be get educated, you know, be educated, go into these conversations, ask lots of questions, do your research around what it is, and make sure you're well informed. The other is do it for the right reasons. So your platform is absolutely burning. Maybe you're losing staff because of it, or your current development team are looking to further educate or move beyond the technology stack that they're used to doing. And you've kind of potentially got a bit, you know, not just the stack itself, but the everything that surrounds it is burning on you. And so, you know, you can help invigorate an organization by looking at new technology and enabling that. And the other is obviously make sure you've got your back office in order and that you're a business prepared and ready to make this kind of shift change. Because as we pointed out, it opens up so much more opportunity, but it also creates so much more challenges through that process. That would be my top three, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, very much in line with Paul's comments there, I think. And I always say to people when I'm talking around technology and particularly in retail, it's, you know, often people will say to me, I need to change platforms because my stock's a disaster. As an example, I sort of say, like, moving to a platform is not going to fix your people in the process, you know. So to that point, and where I had someone sort of, you know, when I asked them, when they said they were heading down that headless approach, and I sort of said, you know, what are the main drivers? And the first one they said was speed. And when I sort of challenged them a little bit around that, and I said, well, you know, what exploration have you done on your current platform to understand where the bottlenecks are, what the challenges are, you know, whether it's catalog size, whether it's, you know, whether it's images or, you know, content, whatever it is. And I think it's important just to, you know, just because what you're using today isn't necessarily perfect or working well, doesn't mean that suddenly you're a perfect customer for headless. I think you need to understand firstly what the challenges are that you're currently having and to understand if they can be overcome on your existing platform, but also have a look at headless and to Paul's point, have an informed view, or whether it's yourself or have, you know, the right people around you to actually identify what the opportunities are and if they make sense for your business and if they can't be achieved, or that sort of, you know, that roof is being hit because you need to take the business to the next level. I think it's understanding, you know, all the individual sort of requirements or challenges or things that you can't achieve, to then validate that you know, changing to a whole different approach is going to enable that. I just think that idea of I've got a problem, headless is going to be a silver bullet, is probably one of the biggest disasters waiting to happen. I think sometimes, you know, a change in technology can alleviate a lot of problems, but this isn't, you know, without a clear understanding of what the issues are and if headless will solve them, and if your current platform can't solve them, and really have that clear matrix of things you want to achieve that headless will deliver for you above and beyond. I think it's a dangerous sort of misconception just to, you know, to follow the buzzword and think that, you know, that it's going to be easy. But flip that on its head, massive opportunity with the right informed decision that can transform businesses, and Paul touched on, you know, some of the enterprise size businesses, and yes, you do see some examples of some of those businesses running on some of the, we say traditional, but they're still fairly modern platforms, and they're constantly iterating and growing. But there is a genuine opportunity in reviewing your tech stack and executing, you know, headless with, you know, with a real microservices approach to your architecture as a whole, can, you know, can take some of those businesses, can be, as I say, defining, can be the difference between those businesses, you know, just plodding along and doing okay, even at a large scale, to, you know, being world leaders in their space.
Okay, magnificent. Yeah, well, you know, thank you. Thank you very much. Like, you know, some awesome pointers, not awful. They were great. They were great pointers and examples there of, hopefully for our listeners, how not to do headless and to make sure that if you're going down that path, you're going to get the results out that you need. Massive thanks to Shane and to Paul for coming and joining us on Commerce Talk with SmartOSC this afternoon. If any of our listeners would like to be able to get in touch with either of you, how's the best way to do that?
You can reach out to me on LinkedIn, Paul M. Williams, or get in touch through the SmartOSC guys.
Great. And for me, LinkedIn or Shane at unifiedcommerce.com.au or via Adrian and the team.
All right. And hopefully now that people are getting out and about and around to seeing people in person again, hopefully we'll bump into people and rub shoulders at some relevant event somewhere around the community in this region would be fantastic as well. Well, look, that's about it for today. So to our listeners, thank you very much for tuning in. Make sure that you're subscribing to the podcast on whatever platform you're listening on. Please rate and review the episode. Share it with anyone who you think is going to find it interesting. And for more information on advice on whether headless commerce is going to be a good fit for your business, please check out our website, smartosc.com. But that's it. And bye for now. Thank you very much.